Hello, and welcome to the Thursday, December 19th edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis. I am sitting in for Shona Strausser today. We've got a great show. We're going to talk with Lance Twitchell about tomorrow's Forum on Alaska Native Languages right here in the studio. We'll get a preview of Friday's Poetry Slam. We'll also talk with several people about Saturday's Interfaith Service at Aldersgate Methodist Church. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A judge in British Columbia says women who give birth in prison have a constitutional right to keep their babies with them. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the ruling affects many Aboriginal women.
The judge from the province's Supreme Court says the BC government violated the rights of imprisoned mothers when it canceled a program that allowed inmates to have their babies with them while they served their sentences. Justice Carol Ross ruled the decision violated the mother's equality rights and security of person and liberty, which are contrary to the principles of fundamental justice under the Charter of Rights. The decision to cancel the mother-baby program meant that infants have been separated from their mothers during critical formative times and depriving them of the physical and psychological benefits of breastfeeding. But corrections officials shut down the program, arguing it wasn't their job to look after children. Jeffrey Cowper represented two inmates who filed a lawsuit.
I think there's a very compelling case that this is in the best interest of children, that it's very much in the best interest of mothers, and that for those women who are incarcerated, particularly Aboriginal women who are incarcerated, moving forward must include consideration of the interests of their children and the interests of them remaining with their children.
The judge gave the government 6 months to correct the present situation and comply with her ruling. Cowper says he hopes the province will agree to reinstate the program because it stands on its own merits. Organizations such as the West Coast Women's Legal Education and Action Fund and the BC Civil Liberties Association agree that the status quo is not acceptable. The government says it will review the decision carefully and then decide on how to move forward. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Earlier this month, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments in a casino case tribes are keeping an eye on. It involves sovereign immunity. Tristan Autone has more.
The case, Michigan v. Bain Mills Indian Community, poses this question. Should a tribe no longer be sovereign when it's operating a commercial activity off the reservation? Here's what happened. Bain Mills bought land off their reservation and opened a casino on that land. The state of Michigan sued the tribe, arguing the land was not Indian land. Chris Stearns is an attorney in Washington State. He says this case is important because it could fundamentally change the ability of tribes to grow and prosper in the 21st century, and putting financial risk on tribal members.
No one's forcing me to go out and buy shares in Walmart. I can, but I don't have to. And if I do it, I'm assuming a risk. But I was never asked, do I want to be a Navajo citizen? I mean, that just comes with birth. And so you are penalizing government, and you're penalizing the people who are members of the government. And that's just absolutely wrong.
Stern says tribes around the country are watching the case, and a decision is expected next year. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
The Interior Department is reporting an uptick in the number of tribes using the Hearth Act. As Carrie Young reports, the department has approved 5 tribal ordinances since 2012, and more applications are coming in.
Interior Department officials say the Hearth Act, which provides tribes the authority to lease tribal trust land, has been gaining traction in Native America recently, with applications coming in at a faster rate now than they had in the past. Kevin Washburn is the Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs at the U.S. Department of the Interior. He says tribes are really beginning to engage with the act, adding that renewable energy and solar have been the most common industries to participate in the program.
So we're at the beginning, but they really are starting to come in. One of the things that it does is it really puts economic development on Indian reservations back where it should be with the tribes.
About 380 Native American tribes have tribal trust lands and are eligible to apply for ordinances through the Hearth Act. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
In December 1980, Native radio station KIDE went on the air. It's owned by the Hoopa Valley Tribe in California. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Kawanak Broadcast Corporation is accepting art for the Alaska Native Art Auction, February 20th, 2014 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event to buy art. Proceeds benefit National Native News. Learn more at knba.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support for this program comes from Wellspring, an integrative healthcare clinic for the entire family offering primary care services, including family health, women's health, and nurse midwifery. Open evenings and weekends, 789-1812.
Hello, and welcome to Juneau Afternoon, the Thursday, December 19th edition. It is 3:06 p.m. You are listening to KTOO News Juneau. I am not Shona Strausser. I am Joan Partis. I'm sitting in for Shona today. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He is running the board. And as far as weather, we're in a winter storm warning until 6 p.m. this evening. Today, snow heavy at times, snow accumulation 6 to 9 inches, maybe more. Total snow accumulation 7 to 11 inches, highs 20 to 28, southeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, snow in the evening, then chance of snow late, snow accumulation 1 to 3 inches, lows 17 to 27. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, chance of snow showers in the morning, highs around 30, northeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, and Friday night, mostly cloudy. Then Saturday, it looks like it's hovering right around freezing and will be snow and rain. And Eagle Crest is open, so it should be a phenomenal weekend up there. So we're going to jump right into the show here. There is a new series here at K2 and on the television station here, Format 360 as well, 360 North. I'm sorry about that. So let me tell you a little bit about this, and then we'll get right into our next guest. Format 360 is a new studio series on 360 North, Alaska's Public Affairs Channel. Guests from around Alaska will share their stories and discuss the issues of the day with a live studio audience in Juneau, moderated by local hosts. Each episode will be taped for later airing on statewide TV, KTOO-FM, and 360North.org. Tomorrow is the second forum at 360, and everyone is invited to be part of the studio audience at 5 p.m. in KTOO's new studio at 360, which is downstairs right here at the KTOO studios in downtown Juneau. The theme of tomorrow's forum is Living the Language. It's going to be hosted by KTOO News reporter Lisa Frew, and we have Lance Twitchell, one of the guests, on the telephone to talk about the forum entitled Living the Language. Hi, Lance. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you.
Thank you. So you are an assistant professor of native languages at UAS. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And then tomorrow it will be you and David Ketsik and Marsha Hodge and Alice Taft talking about Living the Language. Do I have it right?
Yes, that's correct. So David Katzik will start off. He's one of our elders and one of our teachers, and he's going to really talk about cherishing our languages and the value of languages, and specifically sort of how these languages tie us to this different way of thinking. You know, when we're talking about indigenous languages and really bringing them back into everyday use throughout the community. Marsha Hotch she teaches Tlingit here and also in the community, and she'll be talking about bringing our language home so that, you know, as far as when we look at indigenous languages that are endangered, we usually say, well, we have to get it back into the home, make sure children are speaking, and then we have to get it back into the community and make sure that it has this very obvious function and use. My portion will be talking about bringing language into our community, which will include how to help our community become a better place and also how to help our students overcome some of the hurdles that they face as language learners. And Alice Taff is a linguist, and she's taught here at the university for a long time, and she's a wonderful advocate for our languages. And she'll be talking about different resources people can use so that language learning doesn't seem like such an intimidating thing.
The way you talk about language, it's almost as if language is like a living, breathing organism.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and so when we get into, sometimes if you just look at the sort of cookie cutter methodology like Rosetta Stone or something. We're just going to learn language, learn language, learn language. But when we're talking about a language that was born in this place, you know, over the last 10,000 years, you're talking about a very spiritual connection to this place and to everybody that's lived in this place over that time. So as far as the language goes, some of those concepts are really interesting. We had an elder who was visiting with us from Gwich'in country, and he told us, he said, when your elders pass away, you feel like you lose that knowledge, but when you go out on the land and you speak the language, that knowledge has gone back into the land and it comes into you. You'll wake up and you'll know some new things. And so we're really looking at a different way of not just seeing the world, but a different way of learning about things.
Well, that sounds fascinating. So, Lance, and your portion about in this forum tomorrow, which is 5 o'clock free, open to the public, come and join the studio audience, is about bringing it into the community. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you'll be talking about tomorrow?
Yeah, sure. So some of my things will be on just things that I think that students need to make their lives better. And some of that is what the student can do, which is if you're a student of Tlingit and you see somebody else who's a student of Tlingit, you just speak Tlingit. And so one of the things that our community needs to encourage is that the fact that these languages or that this language is coming back into regular use in all sorts of places. And we may think that that seems like no big deal, but there was a time when the language was really suppressed, and that's created a lot of difficulties for our people. And the other thing will be transforming our community, how to create a place that that not only is tolerant of language, but that actually is embracing it and is really trying to become a multilingual community, in particular a bilingual community, so that we can have, you know, when you walk around, you'll hear Tlingit on the radio, you'll hear Tlingit in different locations, you know, and so we've got some projects going to have ferry announcements in Tlingit and other things like that, so that it doesn't seem like a foreign thing. Because sometimes when we're teaching our children, they have no place to really go and speak the language. So the goal is to just create those places within the community, and part of that is probably looking into the existence of a language nest here, which is a community center where anybody can go, but once you go there, you speak Tlingit, you know, so anybody could come, but, you know, and we encourage everybody to come. And so these are the types of concepts, and also daycares where you raise children entirely in the language, and eventually probably schools where you teach children entirely in Tlingit. And so they've been very successful in Hawaii, and it doesn't damage their ability to speak English, to learn English. I think that there's some real sort of myths out there about what language learning does and doesn't do. And so we'd really love to see a lot of folks out there. There'll be time to interact with our four speakers and to sort of ask some questions and to continue this dialogue, which we think is going to result in continued changes that people have been pushing for a long time, who have been teaching this language and speaking this language and advocating for it.
Having Southeast be bilingual is just fantastic. I have a few more questions, and then we'll probably be out of time. So how long have you been teaching over at UAS?
So I am in the middle of my third year teaching here. I teach Tlingit, and I teach Alaska Native Studies classes. Marcia Hotch has been teaching out here for some time, and there's a list of others. I took over for Richard Dauenhauer when he moved into quasi-retirement, as he called it. And so it's a real honor to work and to follow in the footsteps of so many wonderful people who've taught and who are much more capable than I am as teachers and as speakers. We have a really nice growing population of students who are studying the language, and we have classes that are connected through video and that tie in to Carcross, Whitehorse, Sitka, Ketchikan, and it's very fun. We're doing all this stuff through video, and if people want to just sort of watch the class, they can. They don't have to be registered. They can just see what's going on.
How would somebody find out how to do that?
Right now, it's a YouTube channel. If they just entered my name, it would come up, and then they could follow the class. And we're trying to explore ways to deal with, you know, if a university teaches a language, how do we deal with the tuition question, how do we deal with, how do we make it as accessible as possible? And so there's a number of things, you know, and one of the other things that will probably be mentioned tomorrow is there's legislation moving forward to try and make all the existing Alaska Native languages the official languages of the state of Alaska, which currently is considered an English-only type of state.
That would be very interesting. That sounds wonderful. And then there's so many different sub-conversations to have that, what you were saying about how multiple languages doesn't hurt the primary language and so on and so forth. But
right.
The reason I asked you about the how long you've been there is I'm wondering, are you seeing a shift? Are you seeing things shifting toward what you were just discussing, that the language is being spoken more, and not only in academia and at home, but out in the community?
I would think so. You know, and so as I see elders, you know, and we speak to each other in Tlingit, and I think we're less shy about that type of thing. And so it's a real challenge, and I talk to my students about this, and our visiting elders talk to them about this, is it's very easy to switch over and to speak English. And part of the problems is, let's say we decided to say, hey, you know, Thursday night is Tlingit students and speakers shopping at Fred Meyer's night. You know, and so we all shop for our groceries so that we can stay in the language. One of the things that typically happens is, say we're a group that goes along and we're staying in the language, but then we see somebody that we know and that we're friends with, and they don't speak the language, and so usually we'll switch over to English to accommodate them. And so those are some of the things we're trying to talk about as far as shifting our community, so that the community says, or members of our community can see, oh, well, this is a group that's staying in the language, so I just need to, you know, respect that and understand they're not being rude to me. But they're, you know, we probably have 140 speakers of Tlingit left who've been speaking from birth. We probably have about 50 other language learners at various levels. And so we're trying to really take a good look at this thing and figure out what do we need to shift. I think shift radically so that, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, we still have speakers and we have more than what we have. There's probably 20,000 Tlingit people in the world, and there's, you know, 140 who can speak the language.
So you're not talking about just Juneau, you're talking about...
I'm talking about in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Okay, wow, yes, obviously there is a huge need for that. So let me just bring our listeners up to speed. We are talking with Lance Twitchell. He was talking about YouTube that's online, that if you want to see what's going on in his class, you're more than welcome to hop on that. So you could just Google, search his name for the YouTube, Lance Twitchell. And tomorrow night at Format 360, which is a new series here at KTOO, it's downstairs at 5 o'clock. It's free. It's live. There'll be four speakers talking about living the language: David Katsik, Marsha Hotch, Alice Taft, and our guest, Lance Twitchell. It's at 5 o'clock and will be airing on all the KTOO subsidiaries, KTOO Radio, 360 North, and on the web. So Lance, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to take a short break and be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 19th of December, 2013. It's the birthday of Constance Garnett, born in Brighton, England, 1861, who gave us the first English translations of many famous 19th century Russian novels. It was said she could translate 5,000 words a day. She finished Tolstoy's Anna Karenina in 6 months. She translated Dostoevsky's complete works. However, she tended to skip phrases that she herself did not understand. She often missed the joke in the original Russian, and she did censor out passages that offended her Victorian sensibility. And so most of the Constance Garnett translations have now been replaced by better versions. It was on this day, 1936, Zora Neale Hurston finished her novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God, which she wrote in Haiti. She was doing research down there for a Guggenheim Fellowship. She was also trying to escape from a very intense love affair with a younger man. She was in her mid-40s. He was a graduate student, 23. She said he was tall, dark brown, magnificently built. He had a fine mind. The two of them adored each other, but he wanted her to give up her career to marry him and to leave New York City. And Zora Neale Hurston said, "I really wanted to do anything he wanted me to do, but that one thing I could not do." So she escaped to the Caribbean, to Haiti. But she couldn't forget him, and she began to write a novel, a story of a woman named Janie Crawford, who is in love with a younger man called Tea Cake. She said, "I tried to embalm all the tenderness of my passion for that young man in their eyes were watching God." She wrote the novel in less than 2 months. She said, "I wrote it under internal pressure. I wish I could write it again." It was on this day, 1843, Charles Dickens published A Christmas Carol. The year before, he had gone out to visit Cornwall to see for himself the horrible conditions of children working in the mines there, and he wanted to write a book exposing the terrible situation of children in poverty, which turned out to be A Christmas Carol, which didn't do as much for child labor laws as it did for the holiday of Christmas, which was starting to take off in England. The Christmas Carol showed Christmas as a time for family and for simple pleasures, and it caught the imagination of readers in England and in America and helped to create the Christmas ideal that is all around us today. Here's a poem for today by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, The Meeting. After so long an absence, at last we meet again. Does the meeting give us pleasure, or does it give us pain? The tree of life has been shaken, and but few of us linger now, like the prophet's two or three berries in the top of the uttermost bough. We cordially greet each other in the old familiar tone, and we think, though we do not say it, how old and gray he is grown. We speak of a Merry Christmas and many a Happy New Year, but each in his heart is thinking of those that are not here. We speak of friends and their fortunes and of what they did and said, till the dead alone seem living and the living alone seem dead. And at last we hardly distinguish between the ghosts and the guests, and a mist and shadow of sadness steals over our merriest jests. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It is 3:23 in Alaska's capital city and throughout the state. I'm Joan Pardis. I'm sitting in for Shona Strasser. Jeff Brown's the producer and engineer of the show, and our next guest is Michael Christensen. Michael is going to be the host of the Poetry Slam tomorrow, and he's here to tell us what's going to happen there. It's tomorrow at 6:30.
Yes, sign-up is at 6 o'clock for the open mic and for the slam.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Woosh Kennedy. What is it?
We put on a monthly poetry slam. We have been for a couple of years now, and it's preceded by an open mic where anyone can get up and do whatever they'd like, play a song on the ukulele or, I don't know, mime.
And that's a 5-minute limit, right? The open mic. Anybody could go up who's so moved to perform in some way or share some form of art.
Let's say.
And then the poetry.
We haven't had an action painter yet, though. That would be awesome.
You're pointing at me like I'm not going to action paint.
I will give you a can of spray paint and a large wall.
That's sounding better, actually, now that you think about it. Because I've never action painted before, so I doubt I'll want to do that in front of other people. But anyway, so there's an open mic where people could share what they want to share. And then there's the Poetry Slam, and you have to sign up for the Poetry Slam?
Yes. Okay. And then there's the Poetry Slam, which is... consists of three rounds. Each poem is 3 minutes in length. You don't get any props. It has to be a poem of your own construction. And there's scoring. The audience scores people, and then they progress, and the field gets cut in half, and then they go through and proclaim a winner at the end.
Wow.
Yep.
I've heard of these poetry slams, but I've obviously never... gone to one. I didn't realize that there was a winner, like winner takes all for the evening.
And then if you win one of the monthly ones, then you come back at the end of the year for the Grand Slam to compete for the...
So there's 12 people at the Grand Slam.
Unless somebody wins twice or somebody moves out of town or...
Something along those lines. Okay, maybe not exactly 12, but in theory 12.
Yeah, in theory there's 12.
Okay, and each month has a theme, and this theme is...
tribute.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about the people who are responsible for making us the way that we are.
Uh-oh.
No, people that have inspired us and that we've drawn things from. I know that people like to ask poets, "Who's your favorite poet?" And they never ask NASCAR drivers, "Who's your favorite NASCAR driver?" And I just think that, you know, that we draw things from many different places for our poetry, and a lot of it comes from the people around us. And it's a chance to talk about that, I guess.
Okay. And so tomorrow it's at 6:30, and it's at 209 Seward Street, which is across from Zephyr's. And after the readings and the Poetry Slam, there's going to be a party, a thank you party. Is that correct?
Yep. We're going to have a little... holiday get together and another way to express our thanks for the people who have helped us. The sign up is at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
The open mic starts at 6:30.
And how many people can sign up for the slam?
The slam is limited to 8, I believe.
Okay. And how many times have you done it?
Probably about 8 times a year for the last 3 years.
Wow.
So some months I don't get it finished in the last 15 minutes before getting up there, so I save it for next month.
That's great. And how many people typically attend these these monthly slams?
We've had anywhere between maybe 12 or 15 people to 300 people.
That's so phenomenal.
Yeah, there was, you know, the Grand Slams tend to have a larger turnout.
And when are they?
They are the third Friday of the month.
Okay.
Is that true?
I don't know.
It sounds good.
I was just wondering, is the Grand Slam in a particular month?
Oh,
is it always like,
in October.
It's in October. Okay, so it just happened, so you're starting all over. So you have one winner so far for November, and then you'll determine the one for December.
Yep.
That sounds great. And then if people want to, like I have heard about the Poetry Slam in Moosh Kennedy for years, and I still have not gone to one. And if people want to, or maybe like me, that, you know, they kind of hear of things, and then they finally go, where can they find out more information about Moosh Kennedy? I know you have a Facebook page.
We have a Facebook page, and I would search Whoosh.
Okay. And that is W-O-O-S-H, not to be confused with any other spelling of that. So, okay, so tomorrow night, 6:30, across from Zephyr's, 209 Seward Street, there's going to be a party afterwards. There's going to be a DJ Judo, and art by Abe Wiley.
Yes.
Sounds great.
Excellent art. It's kind of it's like a mashup between Ralph Steadman and Terry Gilliam, and he's got interesting ideas of what composition is. I really like the things that on the wall there.
Sounds really interesting. And so, and the suggested donation is $5.
Yep.
Okay. Well.
And we'll have swag. We have T-shirts. We have another round of T-shirts.
Oh, No, a holiday party, music, $5.
Food.
Poetry, foods and drinks, and swag. Sounds pretty good. So, Mike, you don't happen to have a poem off the top of your head you want to share, do you? You're not like a poem machine, are you?
I only have one that I have memorized because it's because it rhymes.
Will you share?
And sure.
Thank you.
I had a girl. Her name was Stacy. We were as close as we could be. I was in love and I was crazy. I carved our initials in a tree. I thought that soon I'd have my nuptials, but Stacy soon grew tired of me. Now we're no longer a couple. She left me here in ex-Stacy.
Mike Christensen. Okay, thank you so much for doing a poem on the spot. I love that. All right, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. It's 3:33 p.m., and it is Thursday, December 19th, which means this weekend, not only is it going to be a great weekend at Eagle Crest because we just get a dump of snow, it's also the shortest day of the year, and we Alaskans like to celebrate the shortest day of the year because that means the days will be getting longer. And in the studio right now, we have three people who are going to participate in an interfaith service for the longest night. And we have Susan Bogley, who is from Aldersgate. We have Doug Gardenberg from NAMI, National Alliance of Mental Illness, here in Juneau. And we have Mark Carlbert from AWARE. So thank you all for coming.
Welcome. Thank you.
So Susan, you are the pastor at Aldersgate.
I am.
Correct?
Yes.
And you are hosting this event.
Aldersgate is hosting this event.
Tell us a little bit about what it is.
Well, this is not the most joyful time of year for many people. And there's often an expectation that everyone should be happy and la, 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 la. And the truth is that that's not the case for many of us. And this is an opportunity to say, yes, we understand that this is not a great time, and here's some space to grieve or to be sad, and it's okay to acknowledge that. And so this came out of my own struggle with the darkness in about 20 years ago, and I chose to not go with my family, be with my family, and I chose to exclude myself from the world, and yet I would find myself, you know, 5 minutes after a service started and leave 5 minutes before the service ended, and I would be sitting in the back pew because I knew there was something, but I wasn't able to name it. So that's what this is for.
So the longest night, this interfaith service has been going on for a while here?
Well,
Juneau,
no, you know, Christians have a tradition called a Blue Christmas, and that is, in essence, a time to give people hope in a time of despair. But it does use Christian language, and I wanted to open this up to be more broad because a lot of people who don't go to church are struggling and have a hard time at this time. So I wanted to open it up and to anybody and everybody in the community.
So the event will be 7 o'clock on Saturday night, which is solstice night. It's the longest night. It's an interfaith service. And tell us a little bit about the program.
Well, we are working in partnership with NAMI and AWARE and Hospice. And each of those organizations will be speaking about the hope in their context. So AWARE, Mark is going to be, I don't want to say preaching, but giving a message of hope in the midst of violence. And Dove will be giving a message on hope in the midst of darkness. And Jamie McLean will be speaking on behalf of Hospice, and she'll be speaking about hope in the midst of grief. And in between all of those, we will have music, really, really good music. And just a time of prayer. Some folks from the Shambhala Center will be there, and we'll do some mindfulness, mindful meditation. And yeah, so that's what the program will look like. I'm looking at maybe 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay. Well, since we have Mark and Dove here in the audience, I'm going to ask them some questions. But it sounds like a fabulous opportunity because I don't watch a lot of TV, but we all get a lot of stimuli from the media, and life is not a commercial, you know, where everyone's amped up that it's going to be like the most perfect time, and it brings up a lot of things for a lot of people, whether it's short of perfect or it's way short of perfect. So Mark, let's talk a little bit. You're their community engagement person at AWARE, is that true?
Yes.
And so what does that mean? What's your position, and what do you you know, what's your attachment to this service, and what would you like to get out of it? Who do you think would be a good target audience to go?
Well, the work I do at AWARE is primarily with men and boys. We know that if we can reach men and boys and invite them to be part of this effort to end domestic violence, to end sexual assault, that we can break this cycle. And it's a human issue. It's not a women's issue alone. It's a human issue, and men, it's our responsibility to stand up and walk with women, even though we'll never know, as men, what it's like to endure domestic violence or sexual assault as a woman. Susan reached out to me as a representative from AWARE to come and speak about this, speak about the hope in violence, because I see the hope every day at the shelter. And I see it within the shelter. I see it with the brave women and children who walk through that door every day. I can promise you there's nothing more courageous than walking through that front door. And so I see it every day. And I see it out into the community with men who are starting to stand up and walk with women slowly after being asked for centuries to finally be doing that.
Right, a whole culture shift.
And who should come? You know, Susan and I were talking about this, and we're both of the same mindset, and I think it's great. I think everybody should come. There are people who are suffering who need to be there for very, very personal reasons, and all of us have suffered at some time or another, and the holidays bring that up, of course. And for those who may not be suffering, we may know somebody who is, and even if we don't, we're there. And just simply by being there, you know, simply by being there in the same room as somebody who's suffering provides incredible support and love. So that's part of the community aspect. We stand next to each other. We walk next to each other, and we can do that in this service.
Wow, that was beautifully put. Thank you, Mark, for
Thank
sharing
you.
That.
Preach it, Mark.
Yeah. I'm not a preacher.
That's a pastor. And then in between the two, in between the two, we have Dove Gardenberg. He's the executive director of the National Alliance, on mental illness. Mental illness here in Juneau. Sorry for gobbling that up. And what is your relationship to this event?
Well, also it's a time for many people. You speak about Blue Christmas. It's a blue time for many people that suffer from depression or suffer from other types of mental illness. And as we know, people who suffer from many mental illness often experience terrible stigma and marginalization have few places to go where he or she would feel safe or supported. I thought this is a really outstanding opportunity to share with others and to feel supported and to share a loving experience with other people. So NAMI tries to create all sorts of experiences of support, fellowship, so that people who are suffering with a mental illness, with a brain disorder, know that they're not alone. And not only do we certainly teach about treatment and getting help in a professional manner, but the importance of being with others and connecting. So this is I want to thank Pastor Susan for offering this wonderful opportunity for people in our community and families to attend.
Yeah, sounds fabulous. So it's Saturday night, 7 o'clock. It's an interfaith service called The Longest Night. There'll be representatives from AWARE, NAMI,
Hospice,
and Aldersgate is hosting it.
Yes, and that's next to the cinema.
Yes.
The Flying Nun Church next to the cinema. Okay, it looks like the Flying Nun.
It does look like the Flying Nun. I was like, you're not promising Flying Nuns. No Flying Nuns. The building looks like a Flying Nun. Well, thank you all for coming in today to talk about it, and thank you for all that you do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Wherever you rest your head tonight, we are all one family, let's hold tight and fill the world with dreams of harmony tonight.
Wherever you rest your head tonight,
we are all one family, let's hold tight and fill the world with dreams of harmony. Tonight,
good night, oh, we just lean aside when a snow just lies a lullaby. Sweet poignant note, she who tonight lies alone. Good night, oh, we just lean aside when a snow just lies a lullaby. Good night, only we have to be no side when a snow chest la la salama when I'm
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
This is Bird Note. There's no place in the world that's had more bird extinctions since human settlement than the Hawaiian Islands, says Dr. George Wallace of American Bird Conservancy. Before humans arrived, there were 114 bird species found nowhere else in the world. But since then, more than half of these have been lost. Of the 42 native birds that remain, nearly three-quarters are endangered. It sounds pretty bleak, doesn't it? Yet, a new and hopeful chapter is being written with songbirds called Miller Birds. Until 2011, the last Miller Birds in the world were confined to Nihoa in the northwestern Hawaiian chain. Since then, 50 of the birds have been transported farther northwest to Laysan Island, where they were once found. Laysan had been stripped of vegetation by introduced rabbits, but its natural habitat has been significantly restored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Now, with favorable habitat and lots of insects to eat, some adult Miller birds are raising two batches of young in a breeding season, even attempting a third. There are at least 120 of the birds on Laysan, 77 of which hatched there. George Wallace says Miller birds are now in a more secure position than they've been for 100 years, and their future looks bright. You can follow their progress when you begin at birdnote.org.
Support for this program comes from Art Matters, providing 25 years of custom framing services for prints, photos, and much more, plus an on-site gallery showcasing Alaskan prints and posters. More information at 789-4370.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Juno, I'm Joan Partis. I'm sitting in for Shona Strausser. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and Nancy DeCharney, the executive director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, just trotted off over from her office across the street. She's looking very, very cheery and festive. She's in a red dress with a snowman pin, and she's looking like one of Santa's helpers. So tell us, what is going on in the capital city?
Well, you know, it's very seasonal out there. So it's a good cross-country ski day, actually. We've got Hit the Jackpot running. It's up, and it's looking better than ever. This is like one of the best years, I think, so far. It will run through the 30th, but it's open every day from noon until 9, and people should just come on down and have a nice day. It's $5 a round. Mm-hmm. If you have a group of up to 15 people, it's $50. So, and then you can rent the whole thing for yourself if you like. We're having a couple of special events. The theme's movies. So we're going to have an Academy Awards night. You can come dressed as your favorite movie star. We might get a little sort of fan thing going, so you can do a Marilyn Monroe shot if you like.
Oh, wow.
But I don't know if we'll get that finished. But anyway, and then we'll have Superhero Day on the 29th.
And when's the movie one?
On the 28th.
Okay.
Next Saturday. That's a 21 and older thing, and it'll be a little later in the evening.
So. Okay.
But anyway, yeah, we're having a good time over there. We've had a whole bunch of school groups come through, and they're just enjoying themselves. There was a holiday tea at 4 p.m. right now. You have a few minutes.
You could still go.
You could still get there.
Where is that?
It's at the Baranoff, and they always do a nice, it's, you feel very civilized, mm-hmm. I think, when you do that.
English, maybe?
It was around me. Yeah, something. Santa Claus is out at the Nugget Ball. He's been living there, I think. He's been out there for a while. Let's see. Gold Town Nickelodeon has a bunch of really good films going on. At noon, it's the Oregon, on Friday, it's the Oregon concert, J. Allen McKinnon. I'm sure he'll be playing Christmas carols. There is a forum at 360.
We just had a guest on that. Lance Twitchell was with us, and it sounds like a great, great forum about living the language, about mm-hmm. revitalizing the language, and that will be at 5 o'clock at the KTOO studio.
Which is a new and exciting venue in the community. We're excited about that. At 6 p.m., on Friday. It's the Canvas movie night, and they're showing Toy Story.
Oh, fun.
Fun. Yeah, it is. It's free. And at 6:30, it's the Whoosh Canadé December Tribute Slam. Now, that's going to be at 209 Seward Street.
We had Michael on before.
Okay.
He did a poem. He's like a poem machine. He did a poem
just
for us.
Spouted it off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm not going to do that. I don't know that many.
I won't
of
even
them.
Ask you to rhyme.
Yeah, please. Okay. At 7 p.m., there is a Trapped live in concert at Centennial Hall. It's $25. You can get the tickets at the Viking, at UAS, and at Hearthside Books. It's more at the door, so get them ahead of time. At 8 p.m., it's Squirrels Holidays Bluegrass, featuring the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band, and they'll be out at Squire's.
Oh, cool. That's rude.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then at 9 p.m., Irene M. is live at the Alaskan. Saturday, winter break begins.
It does.
Yeah,
I know about that.
It's very exciting. It's always a fun time when you're a kid. At 9 a.m., it's Nordic Volunteer Training up at the Eagle Crest on the Lower Nordic Loop.
Oh, fun.
That's free.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's always good to have that. At 10 a.m., there is a Youth Holiday Hand Building class with Louise Kunstada at the Canvas. Girl Scouts are doing gift wrapping. If you're like me and you've got sort of behind, they could help out.
And where's that?
That is at the Valley GCI store.
Oh, cool.
Which is sort of across from the Moose Lodge,
mm-hmm.
right down there. So stop in there. Gingerbread House Decorating with Callie Manning and Chris Taylor at the Canvas. It's $35 for a house, and that's at noon. There's a live nativity at the Christ Lutheran Church at 6 p.m. on Saturday. Dan Hobson is playing classical guitar live at the Gold Room. At 8 p.m., it's Alaska Beatdown, Centennial Hall. I don't know, does that sound like a holiday event?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either. 10 p.m., it's Kari Gruven and the Wrist Rockets live at McGivney's, which is in the Valley. Sunday, it is the last day to vote for the 12 Trees Christmas Walk for charity in the downtown. So come when you're downtown doing a little Christmas shopping, check out and vote for your trees. We've got on Sunday from 2 to 4 a health insurance marketplace enrollment event at the downtown library. This is for coverage starting January 1st. You need to enroll by the 23rd.
Right, and Crystal will be joining Pat Moore tomorrow here on the show to talk about that.
More
she's
details.
A navigator here in Southeast to help people kind of go through the labyrinth of information out there.
Because it's kind of confusing, we have to say. Sunday at 6:45, if you've got people flying in from for the holidays, we have Music on the Fly at the baggage claim
at
the airport. It'll be the Juno String Ensemble. So come on out and just greet people for what the heck,
mm-hmm.
even if you don't. Listen to
on
the
your
music.
Way home from shopping or whatever
yes,
you have to
yeah,
do.
Just go there and have that. Let's see. We got Monday. There's still free gift wrapping at the GCI thing. Tuesday is Christmas Eve, and we'll close the Hit the Jackpot at 3. Wednesday is a holiday for most people. So everything will be sort of quiet, or not. I guess.
Not in people's homes. Not at like 6 a.m. at my house.
I'm hoping everybody's sleeping quietly at mine. On Thursday, Eric Tollefson, live acoustic music at the Newmark Feeders Hall. And we'll be back and check in with everybody on next Thursday. So exciting times. We have wearable art. We just closed the enrollment, and I have to say, we had a stellar turnout of applications this year, so it's going to be very exciting. If you haven't gotten your tickets for wearable art, we're down to about 200 of them for the Saturday night show. Also, you need to be thinking about if you want to see Manhattan Transfer, which Jazz and Classics is bringing on May 18th. We're planning ahead these days. The tickets right now are $50, but they'll go up to $60. Starting January 1st. So it's a nice Christmas gift, is to think about things like that to give people.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a few questions here. So wearable arts, when is it this year?
It is February 8th and 9th,
okay.
Early.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And as of now, Jack members can buy tickets, is that
yes.
correct? And
mm-hmm.
when does the open?
It opens for the regular people, mm-hmm. I guess non-member people, on January 15th.
Okay. All right. So that's a hot that Saturday night ticket is very hot. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in grabbing your tickets, it's now is a good time.
That's
and
a good time.
Be a great present if you mm-hmm. need something like that. And then Manhattan Transfer, of course, we have to plan out because if you're going to get a name like Manhattan Transfer,
yeah.
you can't really get them in 2 months' time. So that's May 18th.
That's
and
May
where
18th.
Are they playing?
They are going to be at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium. So it'll be reserved seating. So same thing. We've got Chick Corea coming in April 27th.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one where we're about half sold out on that one. So if you have a jazz, he's playing, performing with Bela Fleck, Chick Corea and Bela Fleck. So if you're thinking about things that people might like for how, you know, your music fans in your family, those might be good ideas to get because by the time we get to the event, there may not be a big selection.
Right. And then what about Swinging in the New Year? What's the
that's coming, that's,
411 on that?
That well, I'm there. It's happening at the Jack, and it's jazz and classics putting it on, and there's dancing and all sorts of celebrating and carrying on. So,
and all these tickets could be bought at jahc.org. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Or stop in at Hearthside Books or come by the Jack because save yourself a little money when you do that.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's exciting times in Juneau, always.
It is. But you do a great job. Thank you for bringing all this to Juneau. Let us get out there and get some arts and culture,
yes.
not only our local flavor, but visiting flavor as well.
Sure.
So we're going to take a tiny little break, and then we're going to have to wrap up the show. But thanks, Nancy, for coming.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Hockey Sam. High school hockey action returns to Treadwell Arena this Friday and Saturday night. We are senior captains Mark Heifetz,
Kevin Zagarlik,
and Todd Basin inviting you and your family to come and support the Crimson Bears hockey team this Friday and Saturday night.
Games start at 8 p.m. on Friday and 7 p.m. on Saturday. Come out and enjoy fast skating, hard shots, and exciting goals.
Go Bears!
Okay, Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to give you an updated winter report. Winter storm warning until 6 p.m. still tonight. Tonight, snow diminishing in the evening. Areas of freezing drizzle in the evening. Additional snow accumulation, 1 to 3 inches. Storm total snow accumulation of 7 to 11 inches. Lows around 22. Southeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour, shifting to the north. Friday, tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Slight chance of snow showers in the morning. Highs around 29. Northeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Friday night, mostly cloudy. Chance of snow late. Lows 22 to 28. Saturday, rain and snow likely. Highs around 35. Saturday night, rain. Lows 32 to 38. Sunday, rain. Highs around 38. Sunday night, rain showers and snow showers. Monday, rain and snow showers. Tuesday, Christmas Eve, snow showers and rain showers. And Christmas Day and Wednesday night, rain. Highs around 35, but kind of says lows 28 to 34. So we'll see how this all shakes out. But right now it is snowing and it's really, really lovely out there. Pat Moore is hosting tomorrow. He's going to talk with Katie Bousler about UAS spring offerings. You're going to be able to hear some holiday stories read by Enrique Bravo and Katie Bousler. And I heard those stories and they are great. And then Pat will talk with Jim Nitcher from Sitka about the Alaska Pure Sea Salt Company, and Krista Borland will be here with the details about Sunday's healthcare presentation. As you all know, anytime you want to listen to any show on KTOO, you can visit ktoo.org on the web. Thanks for joining us. Have a great solstice. And Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and he is running the board. Have a great night.